Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 28th, 2014. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, getting funky at Apple Blossom. Brewer Nathan Traw is starting to play with wild things at Apple Blossom Brewing Company, and he'll show off some of the results, including a pale ale fermented with sourdough starter. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can find me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. On Facebook, I'm at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. Our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of shopping on Amazon, think of us first. Click on our associate link on the right-hand side of the page on basicbrewing.com. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site that work in a similar fashion. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We've got a Windows app as well. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory. We're on the Stitcher app. We're just everywhere. Check out our Brewer's Logbook at basicbrewingshop.com. In the front is a blank calendar that you can use to track your fermentations and plan your brews. It's blank because you have 12 months of calendarage no matter when you buy the book. You fill it in yourself, and that way you get a whole 12 months of brewing no matter when you buy the book. And there's room in the back to log the details of up to 50 batches of beer. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who's done so already. Protect your precious beer with one of our growler bags. Check those out at basicbrewingshop.com. And for a limited time, you can get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with the purchase of any of our DVD combos. Quite a deal. I'm behind this week. I believe this is the first time that I've posted late in more than 9 years of publishing this podcast. I apologize for that, but I have a good excuse. My dad, who's going to be 87 next month, fell and broke his hip, and he had to have a hip replacement surgery, which, as you probably know, is a bigger deal the older that you get. The good news is that he made it through the surgery with no complications, and he sounded good this morning when I talked to him on the phone, so I'm glad I was able to be there for the surgery. I appreciate your patience greatly. Let us get back into the swing of things by looking at an email from Clay from Pembroke Pines, Florida. Clay says, really enjoyed today's show on different spring waters. Clay's talking about last week's show with the Michigan Springs beers. Clay says, it was nice to see that you guys could tell the differences so clearly. Not always the case. However, where were the numbers? I would love to, at the very least, know what the chloride versus sulfate levels were. Maybe I missed it as it was 7 a.m. and I was driving to work. Can you make them available on your website? Well, Clay, your wish is our command. I asked Alex Baker to work up a PDF with the technical data from each spring that he visited to brew the beers in last week's show, and I've posted that PDF as an attachment to the episode on the Basic Brewing app. If you look at the View PDF button on the Basic Brewing app, when you look at last week's show, you'll find it there. And I've also posted a link to the PDF in the description of last week's episode on basicbrewingradio.com. So if you look up Basic Brewing Radio, look up this episode, there will be a text link in the description right there. So I greatly, greatly appreciate Alex working that up for us. We have a sponsor this week. What could be better than sampling among more than 3,000 beers from over 700 breweries over 3 days? How about doing it for free? This year, the American Homebrewers Association wants to send you and a guest on a free trip to the 2014 Great American Beer Festival in Denver, Colorado. Entering the drawing is as easy as becoming an AHA member. Join or renew during the month of August, and you will be eligible to win a heck of a trip. Visit homebrewersassociation.org for details on how to enter. Very cool. Next week, I'm planning to run the final interview from Grand Rapids, an experiment examining the effect of Clarity Firm on gluten in beers. I'm awaiting one more set of data to bring us up to date on the ongoing experiment. So, in the meantime, we have a fun conversation with Nathan Traw of Apple Blossom Brewing Company in Fayetteville, Arkansas. As you know, if you follow this show, Northwest Arkansas is blowing up as far as craft beer is concerned. It's quickly growing as a craft beer scene. Now, the majority is you know, more traditional beers, but Nathan Traw is stepping out into the wild side a bit. He's starting to use what we call wild microorganisms, including a sourdough culture that he got from the bakery that is in Apple Blossom. He's used the sourdough culture to brew some fun beers. Now, in addition to talking about his sourdough fermentation, you'll want to also listen to Nathan talk about souring cherries for use in a cask ale. Well, Nathan Traw, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James.
You're letting us sit out in the front house this time rather than back in the brewery.
Yeah, we're pouring concrete, and you probably don't want to hear all the slang coming from that experiment.
Are they writing dirty things in the concrete?
It's the drain, so who knows? Could be quite a few profane things in that drain.
The profane and the drain. No, the profane and the... Well, if I were smarter, I could come up with more clever rhymes. But this is... when we were here before... Well, we were here. I subjected you to an experiment before as well, a couple times. Mm-hmm. But when we were here initially, when Andy and I were here just sampling beers, there were no funky beers. Now you guys are starting to get into adding bugs into the beer.
Yeah.
And so I guess you guys are kind of the, among the Northwest Arkansas brewers, you're pioneers in that area, right?
Yeah, I mean... I think we are the only sour at this moment, sour beer production brewery in Arkansas. A couple of guys may do a couple one-offs, but we have a regular lineup of sours due to release. And starting with today, we have one, and they're all small batch stuff. We have one full small batch. We also have a cask ale that's a re-fermented with a pure commercial strain. And then in the future... have no idea what we're going to do. Definitely the guys hired me to brew a Berliner Weiss. I was the only brewer they interviewed that said I would do it. And at the time, I was just kind of like, I want this job, so I'll say yes. And then, you know, the fear later came in where it's like, well, then I'll make nothing but sour ales. And I think what really sold me here, and it has to do with one of, you know, our first small batch sour here. We make all of our bread here in the restaurant in-house. There is an air break between the bakery and the brewery. However, air breaks, you know, aren't guaranteed, especially with a loading dock door right in the break area, which could blow anything over. And so for, you know, 14, 15 months now, we have yet to produce anything that's gone sour. We are draft only. However, our very first keg that we emptied, you know, 14 months ago, I immediately refilled back up. It's a still dirty keg. I put it on an air pump, injected a couple, you know, couple pints worth on an air pump or a pony pump out of it. And I let it sit my walk-in up until last month. And that would have been, you know, that was the real test of how sanitary we are. We had been producing bread for only 2 months. You know, lots of trial, and certainly not the 2,500 loaves of bread we're doing now. However, with all of our open ports dry hopping, we bought a dedicated open fermenter that we named R4D5, the lemon droid from Star Wars that that Luke purchased. For the first, you know, couple experiment batches, we did pure commercial yeast. Even with an open fermenter, very little kind of sourness after a month. And, you know, that kind of pushed us. You know, with the Berliner Weiss, you can do a kettle sour. And that's kind of contained. And then you boil it and you're golden. But, you know, this is the first time we've had, you know, our We have a pure Brett Lambicus culture, and it's the first time we actually fermented, you know, a session IPA with our baker's 20-year-old sourdough culture.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves here. Spoiler alert.
I'm not afraid to do fun and wacky things, and it wasn't for an interview, but you came in, James, and you had like our unwind wheat, which is a kind of imagine a old school, Belgian vit with chamomile and coriander versus bitter orange peel, and then lavender and lemongrass on top of that. Was quite a joyous experience. We've had a ham bone aged smoked porter. And we've really been pushing the boundaries, and I felt personally that one boundary that I hadn't touched yet, cause, I mean, it's to be frank, it's really hard to top a ham bone smoked porter and not like get into, you know, wormwood or things like that, which bring up a lot of legality. It's just sours, you know. I think there's a brewery in Oklahoma and their name escapes me, and then Boulevard would be the closest sour beer production breweries that I know of currently.
So Prairie Ales, brewing through Krebs or Chalk over in Krebs, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, other than those guys, there definitely is no local, a couple other local guys, such as Ben from Fossil Cove, shout out to him. He did a sour beer with you guys
right.
a year or two ago, and then he actually came over to try to buy some a pure lactose strain from me. He was going to do another one. I sold it to him, but he never came and picked it up. So, Ben, if you're listening to this, I still have it. It's still with your name on it. That stuff doesn't technically go bad. You can always regrow it and get it back healthy.
But again, that wasn't a wild fermentation. He used standard yeast. It was all the souring was done in the mash tun. That was patterned after my little sour mash beer that I shared with him. First of all, define small batch. You said that you were doing small batch brewing. What is a small batch in your definition?
Our open fermenter is 5 barrels. We are a 10-barrel brewery, so you could say we did a half batch, which would have, you know, technically small. We've cask ales and barrel aged beers, which would also be even smaller than that, you know, at 54 gallons and then 12. Kind of smaller stuff. You know, we are draft only, and, you know, not a very big draft production brewery, brew pub technically. And so, you know, if this really takes off, when we do invest in a production brewery in the future, if we do, you know, sours may have their own lineup. We may have, like, we'll definitely have a separate barrel aging room, but we may have, you know, not to get too far ahead again, but the goal with these barrels, you know, once they're used once, they kind of lose most of their flavor. We'll use them a second time as, you know, Burton kind of fermentations. And then after that, they're becoming lambic vessels. Mm-hmm. And so, we might have a whole, like, 800-square-foot area that sits at 50 to 60 just aging lambics. And, you know, if the same sanitation practices carry over well in the production facility, we might also be starting to use some goose and... it's technically our first sour was a goza that we had very briefly. It was a full batch. However, it wasn't a true sour. It was a lot of lactic acid soured malt. And that was just kind of sell it to my bosses, the owners here, that sour beers could, you know, do well in this area and that the area was ready. And a couple of local beer bloggers, you know, were very excited about the prospect of even attempting a goza. And, you know, at the time we had the open fermenter, however, full of leaks, holes, and we were, you know, our Brunner Weiss was going to be our anniversary beer. We had to push it back because we kept discovering more leaks, and leaks aren't necessarily a bad thing, especially for a dedicated sour vessel. However, you know, less mess the better, you know, more sanitary. And you've been in the brewery before, James. You know, we experience high krausing quite often through our blow-off ports, and that's because we don't use anti-foam. You know, I personally don't believe in anti-foam, and I've worked at breweries, you know, making 10,000, 11,000 barrels of beer a year who also don't believe in it. And so, you know, that was kind of like justification for us to do it. However, you know, our tanks don't have an extra 10 barrels headspace. They have maybe 3 or 4. And so you've experienced the the double bucket, you know, a smaller bucket with filled sanitizer, and then a bigger bucket that just catches the Krausen that then drains into the drain. And then after, you know, day two, we can clean it up, replace the hose, and for Sani, everything fresh. And
So we've got three beers in front of us. Where do we want to start?
We can start with the smallest one, because it actually is a pure commercial example of a Bretland Big, yes, a Brett. And this is a cool little experiment. It's our pale ale wort, so non-dry hopped, that was added to a, I'm going to guess, an imported, you know, definitely an imported French medium oak barrel, but my guess was filled with a house red. And so the idea was, well, you know, we received two barrels. One had a fantastic Merlot in it, and we're like, let's not sour this. And then, you know, it kind of tastes like a South, you know, house red. It's very astringent. And I was like, you know what? Like, this is the only way technically professional brewers can add more alcohol to their beer is if it comes shipped in the barrel. It's kind of a little workaround we have currently. I hope I don't ruin it just now. And so I added our pure, you know, Brett culture to this. The starting beer was 17-degree Plato. Our, you know, commercial yeast strain or house yeast strain that normally ferments our pale ale drops it to about 3.5 degrees Plato, you know, for final alcohol content about 6.8, 6.9. And so currently, you know, this is, you know, the pellicle, you know, my last check today, the pellicle was formed. My check previously was about 10 days ago. We'd already seen a drop after a month from 17 down to 5.1. And so we're kind of looking at the last stretch. So it's funny that there's just now a pellicle. But, you know, we're kind of, you know, Brett Lindbeck is nice cherry flavor, cherry pie flavor, and a classic horse blanket that we all, you know, experience with Brett.
Yeah, the aroma, especially when you first brought this, was quite funky. And I was trying to think of descriptors. And instead of the horse barn, I was thinking more of the of domestic pets.
Yeah.
I smell more of a domestic pet kind of a thing going on.
And that may be because we did leave the wine in the cask. And so for a Brett beer, this does have a little bit of acidity, because Brett, I believe, is one of the only organisms known to digest the sugars left over in wine as well, because they can tolerate that alcohol. And so you get, you know, this sample, my previous sample still tastes a little hot. And I would say the hot has calmed down quite a bit. The aromas, the cherry pie flavor aroma is intensifying. And then, yeah, I would say, instead of a horse blanket aroma, I'd say more closer to, like, you know, your pet, your doghouse aroma, kind of something similar like that.
And there's a bit of wood in there, a little bit of wood in there as well.
Yep, the, you know, straight barrel fermentation, kind of a Burton style sour experiment.
I'm not getting a whole lot of sour, but boy, it's funky. And there's quite a bit of yeast still in suspension, so that character is going to drop out, you know, when it clarifies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's going to be a fun one. How much longer on that one?
We put it in the barrel in June 20th, and today is actually August 21st. And so, you know, I would really like to get it out soon. however, that's not my choice. And so I'm thinking, I will give it one more month, and I think we're at the tail end now. One more month is probably a good solid guess. So if you come back toward the end of September, definitely hope to have it carbonated by then. One thing, you know, professionally, since we touched on it, carbonation is kind of an issue when you start looking at how do you carbonate these beers, and using a classic homebrew technique of just a keg carbonation straight on the tap. Versus putting it in my, you know, bright tank and my 2 micrometer carb stone being solidly infected for life. but we actually did, we bought a used carb stone for this purpose. So if we do experience, because we can always replace gaskets, that's not an issue. They're 50 cents a piece. And so if we ever do start doing like a 10 barrel batch of our next sample, especially, we can, we already have carb stone, and versus like 2 to 3 days carbonating, we can do like 45 minutes, hour and a half.
Well, you guys are lucky in that you don't have to worry about packaging in, say, in bottles.
Yeah.
And worrying about the carbonation step there.
I will say we'd probably just buy a 20 or 30 year old even Mahin, which you can probably pick up for $5,000 to $6,000, which is a lot on a homebrew scale. But we could probably bottle four bottles at a time every 30 seconds, and so we could actually do a 10 barrel batch in a day, which isn't too terrible. But for the demand and the marketability of a sour beer, we could probably have trouble. We probably love doing it because money in our pocket, so to speak.
If for the right audience, sour beers can command a premium. So
we're quite a far away from Kansas City, but Love Child Number 4 went, people went bonkers of it, and there was even people driving all the way here to try to pick up bottles from it from Kansas City, and stopped in here to see if we just off chance had one, and which is weird. And I've experienced, when I lived in Springfield, Missouri, I come out of the local liquor store with two bottles of Love Child Number 3, and a guy in the parking lot tries to bite off me, and I'm like, guy, you can buy up to two bottles inside, they have plenty. And he just went wide eyed and ran in the building, and there is a demand, but I think a lot of people don't expect it outside of your big production brewery centers, like Boulevard, St. Louis, Kansas City or St. Louis, or big beer production centers. You could say there's a growing center here in Northwest Arkansas, beer-wise, very young, and then probably the next closest beer center would be North Texas, Oklahoma. It's awesome. And I got a shout-out to Little Rock as well. They have lots of breweries opening up. However, we're currently at 7 with 2 more opening up in the next month or so, and I think there's, 4 more in planning here. And so definitely, as far as King of Beer in Arkansas goes, this is the area to be in.
Yeah, it's great. I say it again and again, and on the show, we're very lucky to be in this area at this time. So what's next? What are we with the big beer? Or is that what you want to go next, or where do you want to go next?
Actually, yeah, we'll do the big one.
Okay.
So I goofed and pulled a full sample here, full pint English pub glass, a 16-ounce sample of this guy for us, but it is our dry hopped Armstrong American Pale Ale. So we pulled this right off the bright tank, and then it's in a cask style natural carbonation. Does include our house style yeast, which normally ferments, and the pure Brett culture that we just tried previously, re-fermented on that. So it's a dual fermentation, so to speak, with sour cherries. It's dry hopped as well.
That's tasty. The carbonation is low, as you would expect, because it's off the cask. I don't get a whole lot of cherry,
mm-hmm.
There's hops, and there's a little bit of funk, but they're playing nicely together. It's a fun beer. What do you get off of it?
The hops are definitely going to overpower most of your close wild or sour aromas that you can pull off. That's key to remember for the next sample as well. I can definitely, I guess this beer being our flagship, I can definitely tell something's off with it.
If somebody handed you that and said, I got this off of a keg, you would probably be very concerned.
Yes, and clarity-wise, it's, especially for a cask ale, it's very bright. This beer naturally has a chill haze. We do not filter any of our beers or use finings at all. Our water chemistry and yeast health are such that by day 14, they've dropped as bright as possible. So we do get some protein chill haze with this beer. Shout out to Simpson's Golden Naked Oat. It's one of my favorite malts ever. This beer is a third of that included. So
So how much cherry is in the cask, and how big of a cask?
It is a little over 12-gallon cask. The exact number escapes me, but 12 gallons is a good round number to go with. And I put a pound and a half of sour cherries, and then I soured these cherries myself. They were classic, just red, not maraschino, but dark ruby red cherries. And I pour a little sugar on them and let them sit out for 2 weeks. Kind of goes back to the Y yeast or the White Labs, or the Y yeast smack packs. I kind of swelled up like that, and I was like, okay, it's time to go in the walk-in. And they sit in the walk-in. for a good 2 months, I want to say. And I tried one very, very sweet, tangy, and sour. And then we put them in the cask, and they set with the Brett and the both organisms fermenting with the cherries for, a week after we made this barrel-aged beer, so June 27th, 28th. This cask has been going that long. And this is... what I've done here is I'm kind of, I've been like a lone guy here at Apple Blossom. I'm doing like about 1,400 barrels a year here by myself. And I finally hired a solid assistant brewer. And then my assistant brewers have taken over the cask program. And I said, I'm going to show you how to make a cask, and we're going to do something crazy for your first one. And so we made this. And but his name's Jed. Quick life story on him. He was raised by chinchillas, which were killed by a wolf pack, and then they finished raising him. And so he claims he's in a a local metal band. Very good. I will say he gave me a CD, and I've had other assistant brewers comp me CDs of their bands in previous jobs, and I'm like, oh, my wife's actually, I'm like, you have to hear his band. It's really good. She's like, I don't want to listen to another assistant brewer band. I'm sorry.
Is that a prequel? Is that on the job application? Is that on the job listing that you have to be a member of the band to be an assistant brewer, or is that just a part of the profession?
It's all metal bands, surprisingly enough. I'm a big metal fan, and I was like, I've had three assistant brewers who have done this to me, and he is by far like, this is the best band. Like, if he was just like, I'm gonna go off and do my band full time, I'd be like, awesome, and I'd applaud and clap for him. Anybody else, I would just be like, I'll keep your job open for a while.
So back to the cherries. So I'd never really thought of souring cherries. So you're basically just taking, are they fresh cherries, I'm assuming?
They were frozen cherries. And so what I did is I thawed them out, and then sprinkled a little sugar on them. And then it wasn't quite cherry season, so to speak. And I didn't want to invest too much. But these were just classic, Walmart. Go to Walmart, pick up some non-maraschino cherries. It was the only dark sweet cherries is what the label, I believe, said. And they were actually left over. I was going to do a just a regular, cherry version of our Armstrong American Pale Ale. I bought too much. I bought a pound and a half too much. And then... I was like, well, let's sprinkle some sugar on these and save these for an experiment that I might want to do later. If not, we'll just throw them away. I mean, or I give them to the kitchen. That's the beauty of having a kitchen.
And they put them in a tart of some sort.
Yeah, and I actually think some of them did go to a tart, because after I opened the bag, the baker walked by who does all of our desserts and was like, all right, yeah, I want some of those. And
But they sour themselves.
Yeah, I mean, I think any fruit will naturally sour itself. And then with extra sugar, sugar's also, at a certain point, has an antimicrobial effect. And so does salt, as we all know from curing. But
right.
There's a little experiment we used to do in my undergrad. I used to make all of the lab materials for all the classes. And the little experiment we do is to put make a 20% sugar agar. And so little would grow on it, even just exposed to air. I mean, you get lots of fungus, but other than that, very little. And this was, open. This is open, pour sugar in, and close. Sit out for a couple days, and then it's sitting at 35 degrees. Where my hops are stored. And so, yeah, surrounded by everything antimicrobial in there, so to speak.
Well, that's cool. That's another thing. That is something that they can do at home. And I'm sure there's other stuff out there on souring cherries, but I make my own sauerkraut and I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's using salt as the antimicrobial as opposed to sugar.
Yeah.
High sugar concentration.
I mean, trying one of these with all the sugar on it was not very palatable at all. I mean, I felt a cavity forming instantly.
Did you wash the sugar off?
No, I mean, when I pour them in the bag, it was like a syrup at that point. And I tried some of it, and it was very tart and sweet still. And in fact, normally for making a cask, you add a certain amount of sugar based on the carbonation you want. I added half of as much as I do for a classic English cask, aiming for like a 2.5 volume CO2, which is about 6.8 ounces of sugar. I think I added 3 ounces of sugar, and this sample has been sitting out for quite a while. However, I think the cask is still shooting it out at 100 miles an hour because they have yet to come pull me to ask me to put the the race regulator on it. And so, you know, it's still shooting out. And when I hammered the serving, the gravity fed serving spile into it, I definitely took the biggest beer shower I'd ever had. And this cask itself, after about 25 days, the bung was edging itself up. I mean, I happened to be here and just saw it just kind of start to wiggle up, and the thin plastic where you hammer the soft spile and the serving spigot were bulging outward. And so I was like, let's get this in the walk-in right now. And we chilled it for a couple days and pulled it back out, and when it was visibly like less, and then I had trouble hammering the soft spile in because it kept wanting to shoot up. And so we're talking like this is very, very, very carbonated. So yeah, lots of leftover sugar that was metabolized. And one thing I'm really impressed with is like there's not a lot of kind of like wild character going on. I mean, there is
definitely some Brett in there. But like I said, it's playing well with the hops. It's not like, ooh, this is funky.
Not like this is a bad, like one of those bitter sour candies that you get that's just covered in all that citric acid and whatnot.
I kind of like those. But very tasty. And the more I drink of it, the more I want to drink of it. So, which is a good thing. But we have one more. And what do we got here?
So this is probably like the crowning achievement of my brewing career so far, making this palatable, I should say. Like even after a smoked ham bone porter,
which did you get ham in the beer? Did you when you tasted it? Did you say, I ate ham?
I would say it's akin to eating like having somebody pour you a smoked stout or sorry smoked porter, and you're setting that aside while you finish eating ham sandwich. And then you start drinking the beer, and that aftertaste was slight ham sandwich. Otherwise, it tasted like a very good smoked porter, and then you got a slight hamminess at the end.
I'm getting a little hammy. which is what Steve tells me sometimes. You're getting a little hammy. God.
And so what this is, our baker, we bake all of our bread in-house, which is something like 2,500, 30,000 loaves a week. We've started selling it locally in all different kinds of shapes and flavors, but the predominant, he has a couple of strains going, two of which are isolated from a local winery, which is kind of cool, and I'm not sure of his extensive use of those, but his mainstay yeast is a sourdough culture that's pushing 20 years old that we refer to as Grandma. Mostly because it, he splits it off and just keeps it alive. He never uses Grandma directly. And I said, hey, his name's Cody. Cody, I want to make a beer with Grandma. However, and he's used to us referring to her as Grandma. In fact, I sent him a text that said, your grandma tastes good today. So many double entendres and innuendos in a brewery.
I get a little Grandma.
Yeah. But this one in particular, I was like, I want to be somewhat conservative. So we shot for like a session IPA style. And you guys probably know that anything over 10 IBUs really drastically limits your PDO and your lacto. However, this is a 34 IBU session IPA. So it's not even really up into the IPA numbers. You kind of call this like more of a hoppy pale ale. And, only one hop, which is Hercules, which I thought would play the best of any hop combo I have, because I had no idea how this would turn out.
So, who wins in a battle between Grandma and Hercules?
Yeah. And, initially, you could say after primary, it smelt and tasted like a Hefeweizen. This is one of our GABF competition and festival beers, and I was dreadfully worried that nobody would believe that this was a wild beer because it tasted very clean. And it definitely tasted like a Hefeweizen or German yeast that you fermented too long. Which, this was an temperature controlled fermenter, just cooled by our air conditioner, which room temp in our brewery, which is air conditioned, is quite nice. 74 to 84, depending on what we're doing that day. So we got a big temperature swing going on. 4 to 5 days a week, and then a steady 74 on the weekends. And you know, the it wasn't until after, you know, primary was over that we started getting some funk. And I didn't really check it after day, you know, 16. I was like, you know what, I'm kind of depressed. This just tastes like a Hefeweizen somebody fermented too warm, which may give me good points in the wild beer category at GABF, or it may just disqualify us completely because they'd be like, no, this isn't a wild beer at all. And so this is fermented exclusively for whatever fell into this open fermenter and the sourdough culture. I asked Cody, I was like, I want 2 pounds of grandma. And he gave me 2 pounds of rising bread loaves. So we're talking like we pitched yeast Egyptian style.
But this is, I got to say, that this is really, it's really, really, I really like this a lot.
And this is only 45 days old. So we have a...
So this is pulled off the fermenter, or...?
This is kegged and carbonated.
Oh, okay. It's just, we've lost it. We've been talking for so long, and before then, that we've lost most of the carbonation. But, man, I got to tell you, I taste this. I smell it, and it smells like, I said earlier, it smells like a roll of Lifesavers. That's what came into my head. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre that there is so much kind of different fruit notes that it's like a whole, like the range of the roll of Lifesavers, including lime. Lime jumps out at me for some reason. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
It kind of reminds me like when you're sipping on a margarita that you squirt a lot of lime juice in. Like you mm-hmm. get, you know, obviously not margarita strength, or depending on how you like margaritas. There is like that lime cut mm-hmm. right at the end. However, on your palate, it's dry. And then it kind of finishes that sweet lime juice character.
It's not, I don't know if I'd call it dry. It's got a fairly substantial mouthfeel. But
I guess what I'm looking for is like, like a light body dryness.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not heavy at all, but there's something on there. It's almost savory. There's almost kind of an umami kind of a thing yeah. going on, you know? There's just a note of, it's not greasy. Mm-hmm. You know, you know what I'm talking about. The umami character yeah. that's with, you know, like with stir-fry food mm-hmm. or things like that. It's not dominant, but there is just a little, I mean, especially coming off these other beers, which were, you know, different from this, but the mouthfeel... It's not like the mouthfeel you get like off of an oatmeal stout, you know, which is kind of, it's been described as being like slimy. The oats give kind of a slimy. It's not that. It's kind of different from, I don't know that I've ever had a beer. I mean, we've had sourdough beers like this on the show, or we've had sourdough beers
yeah.
on the show.
Like actually, BBR was my inspiration because you referenced me to... You know, I listened to it several times. And thinking about this project is, you interviewed a gentleman who did like a sourdough 100% beer, and your comments were like, this tastes kind of similar to Berliner Weiss, and then like this, I'm not getting like a Berliner Weiss at all, and that could be just the different, you know, sourdough cultures. Sourdough originally from San Francisco, that's been here in Northwest Arkansas for give or take 5 years. And so we're, you know, 15 years in the Bay Area and then 5 years here in the Ozarks. And, you know, he definitely has said, like, I can tell it's finally starting to change. And so, and, you know, in the IBUs definitely limits all the bacteria characters. And that I thought this would be, like, a unique project on that project I listened to on your
right,
show.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, this is a very straightforward IPA recipe, you know. Pale malt, crystal malt, and wheat. There's nothing like, you know, I'm a stickler for, you know, not making typical beers. And like, you know, your typical 85, you know, 10% wheat and 5% crystal kind of thing going on here. And then, yeah, 2 pounds of rising bread loaf that we just... And actually, like, Ian from Stone's Throw Brewing Company in Little Rock happened to walk in. I was like, I need a hand holding this. And he's like, what did I just walk into? And it's, as a professional brewer, like, that's always, I mean, when I visit other breweries, there's always something kind of stupid going on like that. And that was the first time it had been here, and the first time in my career where I was on the other end, where I was actually the one doing the stupid. And then he came and just helped out. Like, he held the, basically the anti-insect sheet up while I could literally take a spatula and just kind of scoop this rising bread loaf out.
So what happened to the dough? Did it all go away, or did you see it in the residue in the bottom of the fermenter, or where did it go?
It looked like our classic, yeast at the bottom. It had completely dissipated. There was no evidence of, after we kegged it, it was the first time we took the anti-insect sheet off and looked in. Flies, especially black flies, are very, very, very bad here in Arkansas. And so we lifted it up, and, it just looked like, a yeast cake.
Wow. Well, that's amazing. I mean, that would pair really well with food. It'd take me a little bit to think of what it would pair with, but maybe a hot spicy dish. Because the mouthfeel and the character of the beer would probably help put out the fire from something hot and spicy.
Yeah, it is a 4.5% alcohol beer, so we aim for a session IPA style. The IBUs are not really detectable. The bitterness, kind of slightly. This is just something that's very, very, very complicated. And you probably get very intoxicated just trying to dissect everything that's going on in it, even at 4.5% alcohol. I could see us, making this year round, depending on how well our clientele here like it.
And it might change.
Yeah.
Depending on the time of year.
It will never be the same. Our bread tastes the same year round. Being an open fermenter as well. We do have a heated brewery, so maintaining, low 70s or, low 80s temperature is very ideal. And, there was nothing really special about the treatment of this beer at all. Like, everything else we've had has had some kind of special treatment. The most special thing in this is I stole a couple of our baking yeast and put it in, some wort. But, even the, the lacing on it,
It stuck around for a long time.
It stuck around. I mean, we've been talking for a little over an hour now, and, this sample's definitely been poor for the whole time, and it's hung around, not so much as some of our other offerings, but, the appearance of it is cloudy, and that may change due to the cold crashing effect of our walk-in, and, you can do it, and that's kind of what I want to say is, you can do it. You don't have to have a microbiology degree. You don't have to, be a big brewery with a lot of capital. You can be a small startup that's getting over its, first year, which is when a lot of breweries start to kind of open up and shine. And, you can do it. So that's kind of, even at a homebrew scale, it's a lot easier to contain. Especially if you're doing with all glass, you can just throw that in a boiling pot of water and then make tea with that after you're done, It's very doable, and you have great effective sanitizers at the homebrew level. It's doable for sure. Don't be afraid of the funk. Our official motto is craft beer in the natural state. I think my personal brewing motto is just get crazy, and that's kind of what we hope to do here. And I definitely can see us reusing this sourdough culture, doing something with less IBUs, maybe getting more of that, what you've experienced previously, it's like a Brewmeister Weiss kind of flavor, and aging it a little bit longer and kind of see if we can coax some more. I kind of want to say there's a Brett flavor going on. There's definitely some wild sack character I pick up. Just don't be afraid of it. It's kind of my personal motto in life in general, and it definitely carried over to my brewing career as soon as somebody gave me the reins and allowed me to do it.
Well, I hope that you continue to experiment. This has been a lot of fun, and good luck.
Yeah.
And I look forward to seeing what else you come up with.
Yeah,
thanks, Nathan.
Yeah, thank you, James, and cheers, guys.
thanks again to Nathan. I'm looking forward to tasting more interesting and tasty beers coming out of his brewery. You can look for Nathan in person at the Great American Beer Festival coming up. The sourdough beer that you want to look for is called Sturdy Hippie. So if you see Nathan, be sure to tell him that you heard him on Basic Brewing Radio. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Find our bottle openers on our shop. Our Basic Brewing growler bags are available as well. Check out our support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing, Partial Mashing, Stepping Into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site, along with combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. With a free bottle opener included for a limited time in any of our DVD combos. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. Our brewer's logbooks are in the store as well. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We greatly appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are SJG Zombie Dice and Johnny Quest, the complete first season. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget that you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through our associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.